Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
You are now entering the Bad Christian Podcast.
Okay, folks, welcome to this special edition of the Bad Christian Podcast. It's Thursday. We have a mini episode this week that we want to do just to feature. And we're not beatboxing. I said no beatboxing.
Sorry. Sorry, Matt.
Do y'all really want to beatbox?
Well, I think it's noteworthy.
Okay.
You know what just happened there is that we actually were able to Matt heard me start beatboxing and it swayed him over and
it did.
He had to hear it.
It did. I was trying to just go straight into our conversation. We have a guest on the show named Teresa. Teresa, say hello.
Hi, everybody.
All right. So basically what we've got going on today, like I said, special edition podcast. We have a new ebook coming out on Monday. It's called The M Word, and it's real stories from women about sex addiction, masturbation, and pornography, which is a little talked about topic in Christianity, and especially when it comes to the church. So I realize one thing I got to point out here is I got to welcome all our new listeners. So we just had a really big episode, and we've risen really high in the Christianity charts on iTunes to the almost the very top of it. So I suspect that we have a ton of new listeners and listeners that are not familiar with the way that we talk and the kind of stuff that we talk about here on the Bad Christian Podcast. So as much as I hate disclaimers, I'm going to go ahead and say this material is going to be pretty graphic today. It's going to be pretty raw, and it's just, you know, a real story from a young lady that we're going to talk to. It doesn't necessarily wrap up into like a nice package or have a happy ending or anything like that. This is just real talking the way we would talk to somebody in a counseling session or somebody that we met on the road. And honestly, the stuff that we're going to talk about today is not that shocking. It's actually a lot more common than you think. And this is just a little window into Teresa's life here. And we're just going to spend some time with her and see what happens. So if you're new, hang on. Our normal episodes are on Monday, and they're a good bit different than what you'll hear today. So, Teresa, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. A little nervous, honestly, but, you know, I'm excited.
Why are you nervous? Because you're about to debrief your whole sexual history to 20,000 people?
That and to my favorite band, so it's like a little bit of added pressure.
Did you ever think about that? Like, you were a fan of Emery, and then one day you're like, you know what? One day I'm going to tell him all my deep, dark secrets and stuff that's happened in my life.
In front of thousands of people,
I'm going to
do that.
Hey,
Matt, the book comes out on the 11th, which is a Tuesday, so comes
out. I was thinking we would just make it Monday. I'm going to
Okay.
So
right.
Yeah, so we'll just keep that Monday. So okay, well, we'll do that. We'll read her story. Again, this book comes out on Monday, and you can get it at badchristian.com. If you just go to that site, to our site there, then you'll see the banner and click on it. You can go there. And guess what? The daggum thing is free.
Free, baby. F-R-E-E. Hit it, Toby.
No, wait. Free. No. Okay, so the book is free. It's called The M Word. So, Toby, do you want to read the story?
Yeah, and this book idea, it came about by a blog that Matt wrote. It was kind of from a dude's perspective, since Matt's a dude, but it was kind of applying to all dudes, and a girl reminded us, hey, don't forget about the girls. We struggle with the same thing. Matt asked for girls to share stories. We
so
would
that
love
others
to,
could hear them.
Right, so that we could share them if they were comfortable.
No,
and Teresa was one of those girls that shared, and we just decided, man, we need to compile this and get this out for more people to read. And so Toby's going to read what Teresa shared to us.
Yes, I am. So here we go. And this does get pretty serious. This is going to be a heavier episode for sure. But Teresa, we thank you for writing this. And
we believe it'll help people. We're not just telling dirty stories.
We're not doing that. We're not telling stories just for the sake of sex. We're actually telling people so they don't feel alone, and that people can be open, that their identity is not in their sexual history, but hopefully in Christ, who knows all and loves all. So,
yep.
All right.
Here we go.
I was what you would call a good kid. I was an A student, no problems with the law, the daughter every parent wished they had. However, I was painfully shy, and my mother kept me sheltered by homeschooling me. I broke out of my shell once I graduated high school. I also considered that the beginning of the end. I did okay during my first couple of weeks in college. Then I decided to take a full-time job at a Target. In between being a full-time student and working 45 to 50 hours a week, I stopped eating and rarely slept. But I finally had friends and a social life, and that was all that mattered to me. I should also mention that I had all but stopped going to my painfully conservative Southern Baptist church. I got tired of living a double life that consisted of doing every church activity on Sundays after drinking and partying on Saturday. Plus, the college life was way better than hanging out with the judgmental old farts who think all women should be married by the time they're 18. That wasn't going to be me. I was destined to be more than a housewife. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I kept my juggling act pretty well until November 20th, 2006. One of my coworkers gave me a ride home that night. My parents were out of town, so we just watched movies and drank. I don't even remember what I drank, only that I finished the whole bottle. I vaguely remember telling him not to take off my pants, and then this searing pain and trying to push him off of me. I then woke up the next morning in a pool of my own blood, and I could barely walk. I had been a virgin. I was saving myself for marriage. After a couple weeks of my mother blaming me for getting raped and my church kicking me out for no longer being a virgin, I just stopped caring. I started drinking even more and smoking pot, and I started watching porn. My logic was that I was damaged goods and that I shouldn't be picky about what guys to be with. I learned how to be the perfect sexual partner from watching porn, and masturbation turned into a stress reliever. I also didn't care what happened to me. I would advertise myself on personal ads and dating websites, and I would have sex with any guy that was even remotely interested. In 1 year, I had 15 sex partners, and I think I only used protection with two of them. I knew it was dangerous, but in my mind, I was getting back at that guy that raped me. The porn I started to watch went from normal to extremely violent. The boyfriend I had at the time was really into BDSM, so he would regularly punch, kick, and smack me. I actually still have a scar on my chest from where he bit me all the time. I stopped having random partners when I met my husband in 2009, but my porn habits were still going strong. We were having sex 2 to 3 times a day when we were newlyweds, but I still wanted to watch porn. I just had this hollow feeling that would only go away if I pleasured myself. My sex life with my husband suffered. I was faking orgasms because in my mind he couldn't do what I know I could do to myself. In early 2013, we separated because all we did was fight. I was working at a job I absolutely hated, and pot and alcohol came back into the picture. I was drinking several beers a day, and I would even take bottles to work and drink on the job. I felt horrible about myself, and all I wanted to do was numb the pain. That all changed on May 20th, 2013. I was on my way to work, and about a mile from my apartment, the steering wheel locked up, and the car accelerated into a tree. My crappy Ford Focus basically shattered on impact, and the airbag didn't deploy. I remember looking down and seeing my broken leg shaking under the wheel and not being able to I remember looking down and seeing my broken leg snaking under the wheel and not being able to use my wrist. The jaws of life had to cut me out, and I had to be airlifted to a hospital that could treat my injuries. What followed was 6 months of physical therapy and being diagnosed with depression. It sounds horrible, but I had to go through all of that. God needed to get my attention, and considering where I was in my life, that was the only way he could do it. I am thankful that he wanted to give me a second chance at life. Porn and masturbation will always be a struggle, but now I know I don't need them. My marriage is better than ever, and we're even trying to start a family. I don't have the answers to getting rid of porn addiction, but I do know you cannot do it alone. One verse that has helped me throughout my life is Romans 12:2. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. To me, the pattern of the world is pain, and then finding things to cope. I want my new addiction to be seeking God's will and trying to be the best person I can be.
Man.
Teresa, how was that hearing Toby read it out loud?
It's honestly, it really hit home just all the things that I've been through and where I am now. Uh-huh. Because, you know, actually writing it, you know it happened, but hearing somebody else read it, it's pretty hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine. I think just even for us reading it here, I think you're right about that. There's something that when you write something or it's not said out loud or you're the person saying it, it doesn't sink in as deep as when you hear somebody else talking about you and your story, and you actually hear it and it becomes real to you, because it's really easy to trick ourselves sometimes and go, well, that wasn't a big deal. I know me, and that's just me. But when you hear it out loud and your friends and community and family can come around you that way, it does become real, and you realize, man, you've gone through a lot.
I just want to say, too, I mean, you know, when Christians, which the four of us are, when we gather or when humans gather, I mean, I just think encouragement is very important. And I know that you know this, but I just want to say it out loud that we're sorry that you had to go through that. I mean, that's just very painful memories, you know, which led you to, you know, a lifestyle that you wish that you could change things and all that stuff. And so we're just, you know, we're sorry. And, you know, we're happy that you've also been able to see God working through all this.
And we're happy you're alive. That is a crazy accident you're in.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this a little bit. So it seems this story kind of pivots at when you were raped. That's when that's where you kind of pinpoint the beginning of your sexual activity and what this is really about. How did I'm curious about, what did you not press charges on the guy, and what happened at work, and what was the circumstances of your mom blaming you and stuff like that?
Well, as far as that went, I guess at the time I didn't fully comprehend that I was actually raped.
Uh-huh.
It was just, oh my God, I'm not a virgin anymore. You know, holy crap. That was my thought process at the time.
Yeah.
And as crazy as it was at my job, he managed to convince people, oh, I didn't really rape her. She's just embarrassed that she was drunk and, you know, we had sex. You know, she's just embarrassed that she's not a virgin anymore.
So you told your mom then immediately?
I didn't. I held off for, I think, a good 2 or 3 weeks because I was just trying to sort through things. Uh-huh. On my own. I was trying to make it work at the job, and I guess my personality just completely did a 180, and my parents knew something was up.
Okay, so they said, what's going on with you, because everything's crazy, and you told them exactly what happened?
Basically, I just kind of squeaked out, I'm not a virgin anymore, and I'm sorry. That's all I was able to get out.
I see. So being at work must have been some really traumatic form of torture, working with your rapist, right?
It honestly was, because it's like, okay, there's this guy, obviously he's in the wrong. I didn't do anything wrong, but all these people are like, well, we like him more, and obviously, you know, you're just a slut, basically.
Wait, so it was like public knowledge, like he talked about it and stuff at the store with the other workers?
He bragged about that he took my virginity.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. So at that point, then you're just not only, I mean, have you lost your virginity and your family's upset, but also going to work, you're just feeling, it had to be just tons of guilt, right? Just, I mean, that's just, from every side, it seems like you just felt a lot of guilt.
A lot of guilt and a lot of embarrassment because, you know, he shared he took my virginity, then somehow this thing started, like, I was basically the easiest girl to go to if you wanted to get laid. That's what it turned into.
Well, okay, I'm interested in that too. So what happened at church, though, as far as them kicking you? How was that experience?
That experience, well, first, at this point, I was still kind of transitioning from the teen ministry to the young adult ministry. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have the courage to say I was raped. I just said, I'm not a virgin anymore.
Why did you tell them in the first place?
I was looking for comfort, honestly, because I wasn't getting it at home. I really wasn't getting it from my friends. I definitely wasn't getting it at work. So you turned
to church as a place to go, to open up to people and tell them what was going on, and you were rejected and judged for that?
Yes.
Okay.
And so basically their judgments led you just to stop going to church altogether.
Yeah, do you think this would be a different story if you were embraced and comforted and counseled and someone said, hey, you know what, we're going to get through this together, you're my sister in Christ? Do you think you would have that story to write us?
I highly doubt I would, even going as far back as if my church had explained, you know, the loving God that I know now and not just hellfire and brimstone, I really don't think I would have gotten into drinking and drugs.
Okay, so now let's move into the sexual part after that. This is where I think a lot of people get really confused, because the facts kind of betray what's really going on, in that ultimately you did become very sexually active and sleep with a lot of guys and stuff like that. But what happened between being raped? Why people are asking, why in the world would you then start watching porn and doing more sexual stuff? Because wasn't the sex thing bad?
I just figured, I feel like crap, I need something to make me feel good.
So, but I'm saying you had a bad sexual experience in that you were raped and that was shameful. And walk me through, why did you think doing more sex would be a way to deal with that?
I think I was trying to cover up that bad experience. Like, okay, this guy, obviously, he raped me. My first sexual experience was bad. Uh-huh. Then in my mind, something kind of switched off. Well, all sex can't be bad.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then it leads to porn, masturbation, then ultimately being with several guys.
And so you were kind of exploring what sex was. At that point, you weren't saving yourself or pure or whatever, so you were interested and trying to figure out the whole sex thing.
Yeah.
And did you see yourself as dirty, like right away, like you didn't deserve? I mean, I've heard that from other people's stories. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but did you feel like that slut after that, even before you were having sex with other men?
I honestly did. I just felt like this horrible thing that, you know, didn't deserve respect, didn't deserve, you know, a loving relationship. Something just snapped. That's the best way I can describe it.
And so you started watching porn pretty quickly after that?
Yeah.
And then when did you have sex again?
Probably, I honestly didn't get the courage until about a year after it happened. It was just one of my friend's boyfriends, actually. We were alone in the car and it, you know.
Yeah.
Now, also, would you say, did sex become like, because since you hadn't had sex up until the first time you had sex was rape, but was it also a thing of like, you probably hadn't had you had many boyfriends before that, or anything like attention wise before that? Was it like, did the reason why you turned to sex more, was it like, well, at least I get attention that way, and at least a guy likes me for a little bit or something like that? You know what I mean? Was it anything like that?
I think it definitely was, because, you know, in high school and my first couple years of college, I got no attention from guys, like sexually or romantically. I was always the buddy and the best friend.
Yeah.
And so I think getting raped and afterwards, it was okay. Yeah, I want this attention from guys. And unfortunately, in my mind, that was the only way I could get it.
So through all this, is there any voice of reason that you have, like any counselor? Like, are you going to a psychiatrist? Or, I mean, do you have anyone saying, yeah, this isn't healthy?
Not until recently. Within, I think, the last month, on XXXChurch.com, their X3 groups, I finally broke down and joined, and essentially the counselor there has been my voice of reason.
So basically, when you wrote us this story, I mean, at that point, you had not really talked to anyone who was a healthy voice to you.
Not at all. No.
And this is from 2006 until now. Okay, so more details in the story there. So tell us about you and porn. Like, you got into more violent porn? I don't understand that. Can you explain it?
Sadomasochism, BDSM, just, you know, torture.
That appealed to you?
Yeah, because I went from quote-unquote normal, you know, porn isn't normal, but, you know, just a regular guy and a girl, to women being in very degrading positions, and ultimately I would seek out guys that would perform those acts on me.
How do you seek out a guy like that?
A lot of it was online dating profiles.
So you would put up a profile that would indicate that was into your activities that you were into?
Yeah.
So that's like just put advertising on hookup kind of site type thing?
Yeah.
So you would just meet people that you didn't know for sex?
Yes.
Was there ever a time while you were experimenting and getting these sorts of, you know, sexual encounters, was there ever a temporary fulfillment? Like, and I'm not trying to load a question and hear you say, no, never. Like, was there a time where you're like, you know what, I can get used to this. This feels good.
Yeah, did you enjoy it?
I don't think I ever really enjoyed it. I just knew I felt like crap. And in my mind, I'm going to keep going until I stop feeling bad. But you never stop feeling bad. It's kind of like that vicious circle.
Now, that might be one of the lies that people talk about porn, because I would imagine from the stuff you're telling us that you definitely pretended to enjoy it with the men.
Yeah, pretend is the operative word.
Right, right. No, I'm saying, so you would even get into the stuff and mimic porn and pretend, like, and even say it was what you're into and you wanted to do, and they would think, yeah, she loves this. They think, why? What does it matter? She's down. She wants to do it. So they didn't understand that it was destructive and you actually hated what you were doing.
Yeah, that's pretty good assumption. Yeah, how I would put it.
And then outside of sex, you said you were not taking care of yourself either. Like, you were doing drugs and just not, you said, at one point you said when you weren't eating and just kind of miserable, there was other stuff going on as well.
Yeah. A lot of it has just been, I think I had depression back then when I was 18, but I wasn't diagnosed until I was almost 25. So that's how many years of just feeling a certain way, but not knowing what it is.
So was this secret? Did you live a double life then? And people didn't know that you were into BDSM and this kind of sexual. So would you describe yourself as a sex addict at that time?
I had no idea sex addiction was a thing until recently, within like the last two or three months.
But did other people know your behaviors? Was it hidden from, let's say, your friends?
Nobody had any idea.
Wow. That must have been difficult.
Yeah, because, I mean, I'm very outgoing. I like to laugh. I like to make people laugh. And there was just this dark underside to me that no one knew, and I wasn't going to tell.
Wow. Okay, so then the next thing I hear in your story is then you got married. So let's talk about that phase a little bit. What happened? How'd you meet your husband?
Online dating, funny enough. it was actually a personal site for sex, but it turned into a regular relationship.
No, as you go into this, I do want to backtrack just a little bit, getting a bigger picture here. What's your interaction, for lack of better words, with Jesus through all of this? Like, is there a Jesus is with me, everything's going to be okay? Was there a resistance, and I don't want to listen to you right now? Or did you just feel where are you at with Jesus through all this?
Early on, I definitely felt totally alone, because I probably said earlier at my old church, it was fire and brimstone Jesus. You're all going to hell. You can't do anything right, but right. Not the loving savior that I know now.
Right.
So a lot of it was, okay, I don't want to deal with hellfire and brimstone. I feel bad enough. I'm not going to listen to you right now.
So as you're entering into this relationship that turns into marriage, where are you at with Jesus? I mean, have you found any healing for your soul as far as just the brokenness of being raped and all that sort of thing?
No, the wounds were still fresh. And ultimately, I saw my now husband as a way, okay, if I get married, I'm going to forget it all. I mean, because, you know, if you're married, that solves everything. That's what my 22-year-old brain thought.
Now, so if you said that your husband, you met him on a sex site. So I'm imagining he's coming to the table with some baggage or weirdness also.
Funny enough, when we first started talking, it was the day after he filed for separation from his first wife.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
So how did meeting somebody on a sex site turn into marriage? I mean, that doesn't sound normal or common, I should say.
No, you could say it doesn't sound normal. Like, I know, that's my life. I've come to terms with it. But the best I can figure, looking back on it, we were two very, very broken people that were looking for anything to essentially fill that void. And so we just kind of latched onto each other.
And when did you get married? How long ago?
This Sunday was 4 years ago, actually. So October 26, 2010.
And you talked about cheating during your marriage. Was that part of the story?
Yeah. We're actually moving into information that you shared in the email. Was that a part of the story in the book?
No, it wasn't. You did send us an email, so
we'll just, yeah, well, so let's just keep going forward then. Just we'll just keep talking. It doesn't matter what.
Well, if you know, Teresa, obviously you don't mind us sharing that you're now in the process of a divorce, and
that's been since you wrote for the M Word, right?
Yes. That
you guys have decided to separate, because at the end of the M Word, the chapter you wrote said that your marriage was the best it had been, but it's gone downhill since then.
I took a nosedive.
Yeah.
What was the cause of that?
Basically, I started working out. I started feeling better about myself. But in my mind, feeling better about myself, okay, I can go after the guys I actually want, not necessarily my husband. So it led to a chain of affairs.
Yeah, and you also added that he came out as a bisexual and wanted to pursue relationships with other men, correct?
Yes, so those two things, it fell apart.
Yeah.
So when you finished writing the story for the book, this was, at that time, had you been cheating on your husband or not?
No, it wasn't until, I'd say, maybe a good 5 or 6 months after I submitted my story.
So you were monogamous in a marriage and monogamous with your husband for 3 years and change.
Yes.
And then what happened? I understand the facts of it, but I'm really unclear from your motivations and stuff. I mean, I'm not blaming you or anything like that. I'm just saying, what happened after 3.5 years?
I think the old issues that we had finally came back up to the surface, and I didn't know how to deal with it anymore. Just his issues, and I'm still reeling from recovering from a car accident, surviving.
Well, I mean, I just want to say this. I mean, I don't think that you, it sounded like you have started putting yourself in a place to where there's healthy community, but I mean, I think it's safe to say that you have not found healing, or even come close to finding healing from what happened to you in 06. I mean, aren't we conversing with a friend of ours who has gone through a hell of a lot of stuff in her life and is yet to find a wholeness?
Well, I would be careful in saying find healing, because I think that Teresa knows Jesus and has found and knows of and some healing, but yeah, certainly not complete, I would say. I mean, so it sounds like a real mess at this time. Tell us a little bit more about what's going on, like, currently in your marriage and divorce or whatever it is.
Currently, I recently moved back in with my parents. That's just how bad things got, and we're working on filing papers now.
So I don't understand the part about him being, he was bisexual before?
I think he was, but he hadn't come out the closet yet. I think he was still wrestling with it.
But you didn't know any of this while y'all were married for 4 years?
Not at all. Like, he just recently, as in like 2 weeks ago, came out the closet.
Now, was he a Christian?
No.
What would he say about your marriage falling apart? From his point of view, what happened?
I'm pretty sure he blames me, honestly. Just because
of the cheating?
Out. Yeah.
So you cheated, and then it really fell apart. There was issues there before, as you said, but that's when it really got crazy from you cheating. And so how did he find out? Did you tell him?
I flat out told him. Basically, affairs happened, but I started going back to church, and honestly, God really put it on my heart, like, you need to tell him, you need to be honest, and face the consequences from it.
So you pursued the cheating knowing that's what you were doing. It wasn't an accident.
No, I knew it wasn't an accident. I think I was still trying to find instant self-gratification, mm-hmm, instead of actually working on the marriage and us working on our problems. It's like, no, I want fun. I want it now. And now, I feel it.
Now, I hope my questions don't sound too pointed. I think I'm trying to speak to some of what Joey was saying as well about healing and those things. I'm asking these questions, and I don't think you're taking them in a judgmental way, but I'm really interested in the details here. To me, it really matters what you're saying, and I'm continually amazed by your willingness to just say it like it is. So I'm only doing that in response to the fact that you seem willing to say that you pursued cheating and that you want to be open about these things. So thank you for being so candid thus far. So when Joey says that about healing, how does that make you feel that he says that you don't seem to have found healing?
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, and that wasn't in an accusatory way at all. If anything, it was from a sympathetic heart.
Right. And I understand that. I think it's a good question. I'm curious, how does that make you feel, Teresa, emotionally, to hear Joey say that?
On the one hand, I'm kind of like, wow, am I that transparent? But on the other, you know, just having this conversation, I realize, yeah, I still have a long way to go, you know, with dealing with what happened and then continuing to gain to know Jesus for what he really is. It's a process that's going to take way longer than, you know, I originally thought.
So how, outside of the X3 church digital community, what do they call it again?
And you promote it. I'm sorry, that's yeah. funny.
Yeah, we don't know anything about X3 Watch or anything like that. It's foreign to
right,
us. Yeah.
Right, I just I know there's a specific terminology for it. It's X3 Watch groups for females.
X3 groups for women. Yeah.
Yeah, X3 groups for women. Outside of that, is that your main connection point for healthy dialogue and, you know, talking about your past and that sort of thing?
Definitely the main point, but then finally finding a church that's so accepting, you know, definitely preaches and lives the concept of Christ's love. That has been an enormous help.
So you found a that's local awesome. Church that you're also at now?
Yes.
Great. That's a good
so,
thing.
What would you say to someone, Teresa, that was observing your lifestyle, maybe from afar, and they happen to be a Christian, and so they sat you down, you know, over coffee and said, hey, you need to repent and accept Jesus as your Savior, and your answer was, well, I have accepted Jesus as my Savior. I'm a believer. He lives inside of me. And their response is, well, there's no way that's true. I've been watching you. I've seen what you've been doing. How would you respond to someone like that?
Funny enough, that's the one thing I think about every day, just because it's like, I have accepted, you know, I am a firm believer, but I think, unfortunately, old habits die hard when you don't get them in check.
Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate that it's rare, but it's rare even in the context of a, you know, what churches would call a small group, you know, groups that meet outside of Sunday mornings and talk about their lives. I mean, this is uncommon dialogue even in that sphere, which is not a good thing. The church should be more open. And here you are talking to three guys that you don't know super well, knowing that, you know, thousands of people are going to be listening to it. So I do think there's an element of, you know, I don't want to make you out to be any sort of hero, but we are, you know, metaphorically tipping our hats to you that you're willing to be open and to be honest, because it is going to at least lead other people to think, man, I should probably do this at least with the people that I know well.
is this helpful? I mean, do you think that, Teresa, that this is helpful to other people, what we're doing right now?
I mean, I think it definitely is, because sometimes, you know, a lot of people, they feel like they're on their own, that no one's going to understand. So, you know, someone listening to the podcast might be going, wait, you know, this is another girl that completely understands what I'm going through. And I think that's awesome. And that's where a change can occur, or where it can start.
Do you don't think that people hearing this story is going to make them think it's okay to go have sex and watch BDSM porn?
I certainly hope not.
No, I don't think so either. I don't think so either. Do you think this is common? I mean, I know you've said you felt alone, but on the X3 groups or anything else, do you think this is a common thing with girls looking at porn? Do you think you're in just an extremely small minority?
Oh, no. It is a massive, massive community, because it's not just Triple X Church. There's several other ministries that I have found where women are struggling with the same thing. And I just saw, like, the desperation and the fear of judgment. You know, I'm going through this thing, but I have no one to talk to. And to me, it's pretty sad that, you know, I don't know if it's a stigma we put on it, like, oh, you're a girl, you can't be addicted to this, or you shouldn't have a problem with this, you know? So,
well, it's hard enough for guys to talk about it, and we typically find that they don't. And females is just, you know, almost zero. It's the one of the most underreported things. I mean, sexual abuse and activity is already super underreported. Even those things, people often don't even tell other people or press charges or do anything. People keep their sex lives private, and then especially when it comes to stuff that they're doing that is either sinful or wrong or that they feel bad about, this they're just not going to talk about it. So I think it takes a special person like you to be willing to do this, and I think that we're going to see more of it, and I think that's a good thing.
So Teresa, where do you go from here? Not leading out of this interview like this was some magical moment, but where do you go from here? Just from October the 28th here in your life, like what's tomorrow look like? What's the next day look like?
Definitely continuing with my X3 group, continuing to go to church, and even, you know, maybe starting something there, just going up to my pastor and saying, look, this is a big issue, and I think it does need to be talked about more. Just yeah. From what I've seen, you know, I have no idea how many other women in my area might be going through it, but I know it has to be a lot.
I would imagine so. Toby, how are you living over there, dog? You're quiet.
Well, you guys are asking all the questions I have in my mind. I just, I know this is hard, and I know too, Teresa, that you are nervous. So I think what we're trying to do is we just want you to, we're glad that you came on here, and we were just trying to get to the meat of the story too, because I do think that's the point of this, is that people want to hear your story because you've gone through things that they're going through right now. And I think just like you felt alone, and you turned to, you know, sex and drugs and alcohol and stuff, so to fill that void. And I think that's kind of the thing I keep getting from all the everything you're saying, is that there is a void, going back to even what Joey said. And I don't think you're healed from it. I think you're being healed, yeah. But that's going to take a long time. And right now you're even like going through a divorce. So, I mean, there is a lot going on even at this second in your life, and you're still trying to, you know, grasp and, you know, figure out all the things that have happened to you up to this point. So I definitely, I'm really glad to hear you that you do have some community, you do have some people that are looking out for you and not just wanting to use you, but actually care about you as a person. That's the true joy of the story for sure.
I mean, it definitely is, because even with the divorce, I would say this is probably the best my relationship with God has ever been. And I know that sounds crazy, but honestly it is. Like, for the first time, I know I'm not alone, and I know what Jesus did for me. I really do.
Yeah, it just shows how good God is. I mean, that's...
Yeah, but I think a lot of people would go, you know, non-Christians would say, what are you talking about? Your marriage is falling apart,
yeah,
and you've been raped, yeah, and all this stuff. Like, why do you have joy? And I think, I believe what you're saying is that you're not alone, and that we were not built to be alone. And, you know, these things that we do or have been done to us kind of take us away from that relationship that we were meant for. And that is why it is the worst thing in the world is when you get alone with your own thoughts. That's when I'm really Toby and can be really like self-centered and just about me. And I think when I'm in community, it helps me go, oh, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be in a relationship. I'm supposed to not be about me or my needs or my desires or anything like that. And I think
I guess what I'm saying is, she's going through a divorce. God doesn't get jazzed up about divorce, but he's choosing this time to reveal his love to her in a more real way than she's ever experienced. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, that's, I guess that's where I'm getting at.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement.
Yeah.
And I've got one more thought here, and that is just that, yeah, Teresa, I don't think we have tons of answers or anything massively encouraging or life-changing or advice for you, but part of what we want or are trying to do or want to do here is for the people who are listening to realize the people that you're encountering, the people that you're judging, the people that you're dealing with in your youth groups and your congregations, they're people like Teresa. So some of their surface actions may look really insane, but you're going to have to realize that there's people that are going through some really difficult stuff, and if you understood it better or knew them more deeply, it might make at least a little bit more sense. And that's not an excuse for Teresa or anybody else, but it might make a little bit more sense. And you have to understand that all these details aren't just going to be readily volunteered the first time people are in your youth group or the first time you get to talk to them or have coffee with them or meet them on the street. So, I don't know. That's all I've got to say. What else y'all got?
Teresa, you've earned it. Do you have any fangirl questions? Toby and Matt hate when I ask the rock stars the fan questions, but do you have like a burning question that you've always wanted to ask the guitarist or lead singer of Emery?
Put me on the spot here. Okay.
That's what Joey does.
That's Joey's gift.
That's his gift.
It's his gift.
It's my spiritual gift.
So we got to meet you at a show on this last tour, and had you ever seen Emery before?
No, it was my first Emery show.
Wow. But you've been a fan for longer than that, right? Or when did you get into Emery? What drew you to the, you know, singing and screaming and harder music scene?
It really started, funny enough, when I was going to my conservative church. I was trying to find alternatives to the secular music, as they would put it.
Yeah.
And I just looked up bands online and I saw, Emery, that sounds interesting. And this is back when like Pandora was first getting started. So I had my little Emery radio station and nice. I heard the Ponytail Parades, which has gotten me through many a breakup. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, well, as far as the Christian alternatives go, you know, we're the safe Christian version of Silverstein.
Yeah.
Essentially.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really do want to just thank you for being so open and honest and coming on here. I know this is not easy for you to hear your story read out loud and to share your story, but I do believe there are a lot of people, male and female, that will benefit from this. And so we just thank you for that so much, for just being open and honest and funny and cool. And we'll just be praying for you and just really hoping for the best. I think that the road ahead is still going to be difficult, and it is for a lot of people, but we're super happy that you're finding your peace in Jesus and that you are not alone. So thank you for that.
Well, yeah, we appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you
very
so much for having me.
And you know, it has just occurred to me that I bet you listen back to this episode, it's going to feel like, again, another, it's a promotional, it's for our book. We want to have this book. And like I said, it's free. And it also sounds like an advertisement for X3 Groups and X3 Watch and Triple X Church, which is
for
funny
sure.
Because it was not planned whatsoever. It just happened. We don't, they didn't, this isn't even an episode that they were going to sponsor or knew anything about. And it just kind of came up that you, that are with that. But just to be clear, this is not supposed to be a promotional sponsorship for X3 Groups. It just happens to be something that she's into and kind of overlaps. So I think that's cool.
Yeah, it's really neat. They're an amazing organization, and just it's just so cool to hear stories like that of things that they just really care about people and know that people have all kinds of addictions and things that are getting them and temptations, and that they would start groups like that.
Oh, I have a question. I have a question about that. And when you do you think it's possible, Teresa, for there to be online like chat room or group community stuff that's real? Like, isn't that fake, just doing it on a chat room? How does that?
I don't think so, because I know for some people it's really, really hard facing an addiction, especially one like this, you know, in a room full of people. So I think sometimes being online, it offers a little bit of anonymity. I mean, you're still going to use your name, you're still going to use your story, but you don't have to feel nervous about, you know, people secretly judging you or.
So you don't think that the digital constraints are necessarily constraints in every way? It actually has some advantages, you'd say.
I think so, because that's what's helping me right now. Because, you know, honestly, I'm still embarrassed about the things that I've done and my struggles. So being online, it does help.
That's interesting.
That's really cool. I think that's really neat. So what you're saying is basically you can be a little bit more freer than you would be in person, for example. But at the same time, I think what that will do is draw you towards more community as well, face-to-face community. Like if you're, you'll be able to be more open, and then you'll be able to eventually share it more in person as well. So I think that's really cool.
All right. Well, I've enjoyed the episode today. If anybody has any last things to say, feel free. Otherwise, I'm going to wrap up and say thank you for joining us for this episode of the Bad Christian Podcast. Again, our book, The M-Word, has this story and several others from real women in it, and they're equally heartbreaking. And they are heartbreaking, and we're not out to advertise these activities or cash in on sex or anything like that. Like I said, the book is free, and it tells real stories from real people. You can get it at badchristian.com on Monday. And we just want everybody to get it and everybody to share it. And thank you for listening to this story. And if you, I suppose if you, if this strikes anything in you and you want to email us, feel free to at podcast@badchristian.com. If you're looking for anything or you want to tell your story to somebody, we'll read it.
Yeah. Or also I think, just having, Teresa on here, just realizing, hey, we're all humans here. Let's don't judge people and just immediately call somebody a slut. You don't know where they come from or what they're doing or why doing the things they're doing. Give everybody just a little bit of a break. And you know who I'm talking to right now? Me first. I'm talking to Toby first. We're all humans. That's where we got to start with. That's the number one thing we know. We're all humans. So we all make mistakes. We all do good things too sometimes. And so let's just all figure that out, that, hey, let's give everybody a break and give them a moment to tell you who they are and not just judge them. So
you're basically saying that you need to stop starting at he's a piece of shit.
Yeah, I have to stop being a total asshole. I'm only going to be 75% asshole from here on out. I guarantee you.
All right. We'll see you guys on Monday with a regular standard issue episode.
Teresa, yep. We love you. Thank you so much, and thanks for being on the show.
I love you guys too. Thank you so much.